Blog Talk Radio.
It's 8:52 here in New York. I'm Brian Thumble. We understand that there has been a plane crash on the southern tip of Manhattan. You're looking at the World Trade Center. We understand that a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center. We don't know anything more than that. We don't know if it was a commercial aircraft. We don't know if it was a private aircraft. We have no idea how many were on board or what the extent of the injuries are right now. We have, I understand, an eyewitness on the phone right now. Sir, good morning. This is Bryant Gumbel. Could you give us your name?
Yeah, my name is Stuart.
Stuart, where are you right now?
I'm working at a restaurant in Soho.
All right, so tell us what you saw, if you would.
I was waiting at a table, and I literally saw it seemed to be like a small plane. I just heard a couple noises. It looked like it, like, bounced off the building, and then I just saw a huge, like, ball of fire on top. And then the smoke seemed to simmer down, and it just, a lot of smoke was coming out, and that's pretty much the extent of what I saw.
Can you tell us about the scene down there right now?
Right now, people are just on the street looking at the building. The building, it was just a lot of smoke. It's not too crazy down where I am.
How far away from the World Trade Center specifically are you?
I'm actually on Thompson Street North. I'm not too far.
It's 8:54 right now, Stuart. Can you tell me when this happened exactly?
I would have to say about 10 minutes ago.
Were you looking up as the plane approached the building, or did it only catch your attention after it crashed into the World Trade Center?
I heard a crashing sound, but I looked up quick enough to actually see something go into the building, but everything happened so fast I wasn't quite sure what I was looking at.
So there's no way you can know whether or not the plane seemed to be in trouble before it crashed into the building.
Oh, no, I couldn't tell.
It's hard for us to tell from the picture we're seeing just how far down from the top that plane crashed. Have you any better eyesight to it from your vantage point?
Not really. All I know is it definitely wasn't the top of the building because that seems to be intact from what I saw.
Obviously, the timing of this is important. It comes before 9 o'clock. perhaps, and we say that in hopeful fashion, perhaps not everybody was at work, because if that building was in fact crowded with workers, we're looking at probably some casualties and injuries of considerable proportions. But right now there's no way of telling that. We're on the line with another eyewitness. Sir, this is Bryant Gumbel in New York.
Oh, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. You're Wendell?
Yes, I am.
Wendell, can you give me your last name?
Klein.
Wendell Klein. Tell me where you are, if you would.
Well, right now I'm back in the hotel. I'm in the hotel offices here, the front office.
You're in the... Okay, where were you when
I was standing right in front of the the hotel. I'm the doorman there. And...
Which hotel?
Marriott World Trade Center.
Right across from the World Trade Center.
It's actually right in between them.
Right in between the World Trade Center.
Yes.
Okay, so you were standing outside, and tell us what you saw and what you heard.
Well what I heard first, an explosion, and I just figured that it was a plane passing by. Then all of a sudden, stuff just started falling, like bricks and paper and everything. And so I just kind of like ran like inside to get away from the falling debris and glass and so forth. Then... after, like, everything stopped because it, like, was falling in the street and the cars were crashing into each other. And then when it kind of stopped, I heard a guy screaming. And when I looked over, there was this guy that was on fire. So I kind of, like, ran over, and I tried to, like, put the fire out on him. And he was like, screaming. And I just told him to roll, and he said he can't. And then another guy came over with his bag and kind of, like, put the flames out on him. So... right now, he's being taken care of. I just had everyone call the ambulance and stuff so it can help him out.
He caught fire as a result of the falling debris?
Yeah.
How much debris, can you give us an idea of how much came crashing to the ground?
It's just a lot. Bricks, a lot of bricks, a lot of glass. I'm like, enough to, like, damage cars on the street, make cars swerve into each other, that kind of thing.
I hear alarms going off down there. What's happening?
That's our hotel alarm, and basically... I guess that went off automatically. They've evacuated everyone in the hotel. They evacuated all employees.
They have evacuated the hotel?
Yes.
Immediately?
Yes.
Are you hearing anything, Wendell, about what kind of a plane it was
or
how many were on board?
No.
All right. Mr. Klein, thank you very much, sir. I understand Teresa Renault is with us right now. Ms. Renault, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
This is Bryant Gumbel. I'm down on 59th and 5th. Where are you?
I am in Chelsea, and we are at 8th and 16th. We are the tallest building in the area, and my window faces south, so it looks directly onto the World Trade Center. And I would say, you know, approximately 10 minutes ago, there was a major explosion from probably, it looks like about the 80th floor. It looks like it's affected probably 4 to 8 floors. Major flames are coming out of the north side and also the east side of the building, yes. And it was very loud explosion followed by flames, and it looks like the building is still on fire on the inside.
Which building are we talking about, the one that's westernmost?
Yes, sir.
Did you hear the explosion from your position?
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, we heard it, and because I was just like standing there pretty much looking out the window, I didn't see what caused it or if there was an impact.
So you have no idea right now?
Oh, there's another one. Another plane just hit. Right? Oh, my God. Another plane has just hit. It hit another building. Flew right into the middle of it. Explosion. My God, it's right in the middle of the building.
This one into the east tower?
Yes. Yes. Right in the middle of the building. And right now, that was definitely looked like it was on purpose.
You saw a plane?
Yes, I just saw a plane go into the building.
Why do you say that was definitely on purpose?
Because it just flew straight into it. It looks like it's about, 15 floors lower than the first building, and there is now flames coming out of that building as well. They're both completely on fire.
Now, Teresa, hang on with us 1 second. We're going to re-rack the tape of when we were talking to you to see if we can tell...
Okay.
We can't see anything. We can't see a second plane in the picture. There we see the explosion.
This just in, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
I just witnessed a plane that appeared to be cruising slightly lower than normal altitude over New York City, and it appears to have crashed into, I don't know which tower it is, but it hit directly in the middle of one of the World Trade Center towers. The plane just coming in low, and the wingtips tilted back and forth, and then it flattened out. It looks like it's hit at a slight angle into the World Trade Center. I can see flames now coming out the side of the building, and smoke continues to billow.
I said the hole takes about, looks like 6-7 floors were taken out. And there's more explosions right now. Hold on, people are running.
Hold on just a moment. We've got an explosion inside.
The building's exploding right now. You got people running up the street.
Okay.
Hold on, I'll tell you what's going on.
Okay, just put Winston on pause there for just a moment.
Okay, the whole building just exploded some more. The whole top part.
Okay.
The building's still intact. People are running up the streets.
You are looking at this picture. It is the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, both of them being damaged by impacts from planes. We saw one happen at about maybe 9 minutes before the top of the hour, and just moments ago, so maybe 18 minutes after the first impact, the second tower was impacted by another passenger plane.
That's absolutely inexplicable. There shouldn't be any aircraft in that area, much less something heading what looked like deliberately for the World Trade Center Tower.
We went to a high point in our building, which is on the 25th floor, and you had a clear view of the both World Trade Centers, and the one tower was smoking hard. And there was another plane that was flying low, and we just looked at it, and before you know it, just kamikaze, boom, right into the other tower, and mass explosion, windows flying. It was horrible.
We heard a big bang, and then we saw smoke coming out, and everybody started running out, and we saw the plane on the other side of the building, and there was smoke everywhere, and people are jumping out the windows. Over there, they're jumping out the windows, I guess, because they're trying to save themselves. I don't know.
Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country. I have spoken to the Vice President, to the Governor of New York, to the Director of the FBI, and have ordered that the full resources of the federal government go to help the victims and their families, and to conduct a full-scale investigation to hunt down and to find those folks who committed this act.
We also have a report now that it was a plane that crashed into the Pentagon, and we have a large fire at the Pentagon. The Pentagon is being evacuated as we speak.
There is a lot of confusion here at the Pentagon. It appears that something hit the Pentagon on the outside of the fifth corridor, on the Army corridor. Several Army officers I talked to reported hearing a big explosion, seeing shards of metal coming past their window. The Pentagon has been evacuated. Emergency services personnel were rushing to reports of several people trapped in the building. Most of the building's 24,000 people are outside of the building or in the center courtyard as the emergency teams try to sort out what has happened here.
Thank you.
There has just been a huge explosion. We can see a billowing smoke rising, and I'll tell you that I can't see that second tower, but there was a cascade of sparks and fire, and now it looks almost like a mushroom cloud explosion, this huge billowing smoke in the second tower. This was the second of the two towers hit, and I cannot see behind that smoke, but just look at that. That is about as frightening a scene as you will ever see.
Just before 10 o'clock, parts of the building began peeling away. People started screaming. The police began yelling, run, run. And thousands of people started running away from the buildings as they were falling.
There, as you can see, perhaps the second tower, the front tower, the top portion of which is collapsing. Good Lord. There are no words.
Where I'm right now, there's a thick plume of smoke, and you can see crowds of people, including emergency service workers and police officers, running from the scene, screaming, and there's a school nearby where there were kids in the schoolyard. That has been emptied out, and they're running up the street now, too. The whole sort of the neighborhood, I'd say several blocks up, is covered by this almost powdery smoke. Little tiny pieces of building you can see just floating in the wind around it. It's almost as if like a huge cloud had kind of enveloped that part of Lower Manhattan.
You saw people being wheeled on gurneys away from the site of the explosion. People were coming out with masks over their face, anything they could put over their face, because the air was still very thick with debris.
We have a report now that a large plane crashed this morning north of the Somerset County Airport, which is in western Pennsylvania, not too terribly far from Pittsburgh. We don't know if this is somehow connected to what has gone on in New York and Washington, but we do know that another plane has crashed, this one about 80 miles south of Pittsburgh, or at least to the southeast of Pittsburgh.
Everyone, I'm sure, on their mind is God rest the souls of those who've lost their lives this morning in New York, in Washington, near Pittsburgh, in Pennsylvania. It is just a story for which there are no words to describe.
As one of the most seismic moments in American history was unfolding, the president was in the most unlikely of settings. Moments before entering that Florida classroom, he'd been told a small plane had hit the first tower.
The president, the principal, and I all had the same reaction. Oh, what a horrible accident. The pilot must have had a heart attack or something.
For his chief of staff, the picture soon changed.
Captain Lauer came back up to me and said, oh my God, another plane hit the other tower at the World Trade Center. And I knew that this was not a coincidence. It wasn't an accident. And so I decided to pass on two facts and make one editorial comment to the president and to do nothing to invite a dialogue with him. I thought about what I would say. I opened the door to the room, came in. That's when I walked up to the president and I leaned over and I whispered into his right ear, a second plane hit the second tower. America is under attack. And I looked at the president. I could still see him facing forward with his head bobbing up and down. I honestly believe he was thinking about the burden that he accepted when he took the oath of office. I like to say that's when he became the president. And I was very impressed that he did nothing to introduce fear to those second graders. He did nothing to demonstrate fear to the media that would have satisfied the terrorists all around the world.
Charity Wallace was at the White House.
I remember just this cacophony of sound, of people yelling and screaming and running in the heels on that tile. and Secret Service were running. And that's really what scared me, because I'd never seen Secret Service run before. And as we were running towards the gate, the agent looked at all the women and said, take your shoes off and run for your life. And I physically stopped because it was such a jarring and terrifying thing to hear. And I just said, where are we supposed to go? And he said, get as far away from here as you can.
What would have seemed unthinkable 20 years ago, now, after the withdrawal from Afghanistan, has become a reality.
What's happened in Afghanistan has just made Mrs. Bush really sad and sick, honestly, for the women. We've talked a lot about that. They will be commemorating September 11th, this 20th anniversary. And I think that, again, they reflect, like I do, on the courage and bravery, on the sacrifice of the men and women in uniform and all of that. I do think that there is a sense that people have forgotten, in a way, that day and everything that happened that day, the fight for freedom that united our country at the time.
Do you fear that there's a danger that people forget?
I've always felt that it was a slight danger. I think that it's been exacerbated by what happened in Afghanistan over the last month. I am haunted by the images of 9/11, and I want other people to feel the emotion out of respect. I remember September 11, 2001 every day. I feel more convicted to make sure young people understand what happened. So it's for me, it's not 20 years ago. For me, it's yesterday.
Good evening. Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. The victims were in airplanes or in their offices. Secretaries, businessmen and women, military and federal workers, moms and dads, friends and neighbors. Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger. These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shattered steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity in the world, and no one will keep that light from shining. Today, our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature, and we responded with the best of America, with the daring of our rescue workers, with the caring for strangers and neighbors who came to give blood and help in any way they could. Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans. Our military is powerful, and it's prepared. Our emergency teams are working in New York City and Washington, D.C. to help with local rescue efforts. Our first priority is to get help to those who have been injured and to take every precaution to protect our citizens at home and around the world from further attacks. The functions of our government continue without interruption. Federal agencies in Washington, which had to be evacuated today, are reopening for essential personnel tonight and will be open for business tomorrow. Our financial institutions remain strong, and the American economy will be open for business as well. The search is underway for those who are behind these evil acts. I've directed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to find those responsible and to bring them to justice. We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them. I appreciate so very much the members of Congress who have joined me in strongly condemning these attacks. And on behalf of the American people, I thank the many world leaders who have called to offer their condolences and assistance. America and our friends and allies join with all those who want peace and security in the world. And we stand together to win the war against terrorism. Tonight I ask for your prayers for all those who grieve, for the children whose worlds have been shattered, for all whose sense of safety and security has been threatened. And I pray they will be comforted by a power greater than any of us, spoken through the ages in Psalm 23. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. This is a day when all Americans from every walk of life unite in our resolve for justice and peace. America has stood down enemies before, and we will do so this time. None of us will ever forget this day, yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world. Thank you. Good night, and God bless America.
Hey everybody, James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on Mojo 5.0 Radio. Mojo50.com, if you aren't listening, you should be. The very best in conservative and libertarian talk radio. You're listening to a Conservative Perspective's 20th anniversary 9/11 retrospective. We'll be back on the other side. We're down at the bottom of the hour, and we will conclude with the last half of the hour, survivor stories from that terrible day, here on A Conservative Perspective, Mojo 5.0 Radio. We will be right back after this.
Exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me. So mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me China, then take a look around to Selma, Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to take race and tell me. Don't believe we're
we continue to crawl, we knew we had to leave. Get out of there. And as we continued to crawl, one lady was just ready to give up.
And when she said she could not make it anymore, it's like, oh yeah, you're going. I am not telling your children I left you. Get on my back. I'm going to carry you out of here if I have to. It seemed like we crawled forever to get to this window. I had no light to see anything. What led me to that window, I knew it was in that direction, and there was the smallest little pinhole of a light, and I just kept crawling straight to that window. And once we got to the window, we just started kicking it and beating on that window.
I came down the corridor, I looked up to the next floor level, and there was two or three people in the window. And a person was banging on the window and it would not even crack or give way.
And this young soldier, I will never forget him. It was a printer not far from us at this window. And he threw the printer at this window. And it just bounced right back in my lap.
The Pentagon had been newly renovated. And the renovations had included blast-resistant windows.
They're designed not to come out, not to open. The reason they did that was because of the several terrorist acts, including Oklahoma City and the bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Kenya. Most of the people that were killed inside the embassy were killed by glass traveling at 100 miles an hour.
These blast-resistant windows have saved lives and protected a lot of people inside the building, but they're also preventing a lot of people inside the building from getting out.
That's why I blame it myself. I brought these people to a window and we can't get out of here. And I'm like, God, I'm going to die. God, take care of my girls.
I knew that they're trapped. They can't get out. So I decided I would try and find another way up there. There was a stairway there close. It was so hot that the paint was blistering on the wall. And steps were burning my feet through my shoes. And I did not get to those people in the window.
And the guy threw the printer again. The frame popped open just a bit, and the smoke just barreled out of that room. And we were beating on the window frame. And the window finally opened. And down below, the people, they looked up and they saw all of the smoke. And they were like, jump, jump, jump. I just knew there were more people. And I told my colonel, sir, there are people in here. We can't go. My colonel said, this is an order. You get out of this window right now. That was the first order I wanted to disobey, but I knew I had to. And the guys were down there, and I crawled down them. They carried me to a triage, and that's as far as I remember. I am told the rest of the story. Sorry.
I was invited to attend a meeting at Aon Corporation that day. The meeting was to be held on the 105th floor of Two World Trade Center, the South Tower.
The meeting began late, like many previous insurance meetings Joe attended.
It was a beautiful day that day in September, absolutely beautiful September, clear, crisp day. And at 8:48, the lights flickered. We were in an internal conference room, so we couldn't see anything. We didn't hear anything. We didn't feel anything. We just had this flicker of lights, and one of the gentlemen, Rick Blood from Aon Corporation, came bounding into the room. He said there had been an explosion in the North Tower, so we had to evacuate.
Reluctantly, they began to walk down.
You had a critical decision to make at 90. The door to the fire stairwell on 90 was propped open, so I followed everybody out. Probably the worst 30, 40 seconds of my life to look out those windows to the north and see this incredible sight. Big black holes in the sides of the building and gray and black billows of smoke and flames redder than any red I'd ever seen in my life. Looking up the sides of the building, and you see that. You see furniture, you see paper, you see people being pulled out of the building against their will. Absolutely gruesome, awesome sight. And it was, I mean, I was so afraid. I've never felt that afraid before in my life.
Others remained behind mesmerized. At 78, Mary, the woman who asked him to attend the meeting, was calling him.
She wants me to go to the elevator with her. I kind of politely waved to her, never said a word, turned and went back to the stairwell. And I tell people all the time that was arguably the best decision I've ever made.
Joe was between floors 74 and 72 as United Airlines Flight 175 was quickly descending, its sights set directly on the South Tower. When the plane ripped through the building between floors 77 and 83, it was just four floors above Dittmar.
Wow. You're in this concrete bunker of a fire stairwell, and this thing just starts shaking so violently. Concrete was spidering out, and the handrails breaking away from the wall, and the steps, like waves in the ocean, undulating underneath our feet. And you feel this heat ball, and you smell this jet fuel. And this thing's rocking and rolling back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and it felt like forever. But it was probably seconds, maybe a minute, and it had finally stopped.
It was the only moment Dittmar thought he would die. Miraculously, he was left unscathed. At the 35th floor, Joe met the first responders, the cops, firefighters, and paramedics, going up.
Just the looks in their eyes told the whole story without any words being spoken. Just the looks in their eyes. They knew they were going up the steps to try to save lives they couldn't save. And they knew that they were going up those steps to try to fight a fire that they could not meet. And they knew that they were going up and they were never coming back. I don't know how anybody could be that brave. I don't know. I really think that the ability to talk about it has been a catharsis, has been a therapy that has helped me immensely, and it's also given me a reason, a cause.
Joe doesn't accept any money for his talks, but asks that anyone who cares to make a donation send it to the Chatham, North Carolina 9/11 First Responders Memorial. The memorial, which he's helping build, features a donated beam from the World Trade Center. The main lessons he learned from his 9/11 experience are: 1, there are no guarantees in life; 2, America is no longer invulnerable to terrorist attacks; 3,
we need to continue to be who we want to be, which is freedom-loving, liberty-loving Americans. We can't give that up.
And 4,
don't sweat the small stuff. Having an occurrence like this happen in your life makes you realize what really are the priorities in life. It's you, those you love, and your God that are the most important things.
A devout Catholic, Dittmar said his faith never wavered that September day.
And if you didn't believe in divine providence before that day or after that day, you were never going to believe, because you needed the helping hand that I got from the man above. And there's no doubt in my mind. It only strengthened what I already knew.
Dittmar, who has a 9/11 tattoo on his wrist, believes if he reaches just one person in the audience, he's done his job.
Because if somebody remembers and doesn't forget and carries the story of these folks forward, it's a good day. It is my passion. It is my my goal. It is my thing that I got to keep doing this.
At the Pentagon, like everywhere else, staffers were riveted by news of the attacks in New York.
For us already, it was pretty apparent these were terrorist attacks, and we were even presuming it was Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and coming out of Afghanistan and already thinking about the impact for us in the Department of Defense. And then almost at that time, we felt a really violent, shuddering impact at the Pentagon. corridors themselves were literally full of the thickest, blackest smoke that you can imagine from ceiling to floor. And so people couldn't get their bearings. Part of the wall had been blown out by the landing gear of an aircraft. And that's when I first knew for certain that a plane had flown into the building.
I turned the corner and there's a tire from an airplane. Didn't realize what it was, but a huge piece of a fuselage of an airplane and a tire and some chairs.
Inside the crash site, conditions were deteriorating.
The flames were so hot, it was melting parts of the ceiling and would drip and melt through your uniform. And we thought, there's no way anyone is alive in here. And then we kind of heard a noise, kind of a weak noise off to the side.
In the distance, I see the smoke, and in a little closer in the foreground, there's this shape. It looks like a head. And as I'm staring at it, it blinks.
Jerry Henson was alive, but trapped by debris.
And I'm pushing for all I'm worth, and I'm screaming as loud as I can, someone help, help me.
And now the whole structure is starting to groan and kind of creak and shriek, and you can sense that it's about to collapse, and people outside are yelling that the building's collapsing. But he was just wedged in there. There was just no way to get him out.
Tarantino got on his back and put his feet against the object. And pushed it up maybe 3 or 4 inches, which was enough.
We're both yelling, he's yelling, I can't hold this any longer, you know, get out of here, get out.
Then Cap Thomas grabbed him and dragged him out, and it was literally in the nick of time because that space collapsed and caved in right behind it.
Jerry Henson made it out. But both Tarantino and Thomas were headed back into the building to look for survivors.
Dave Thomas saw Tarantino's name tag and he reached over and ripped it off of his chest.
I wanted to be able to tell this story. If I made it, he didn't.
And then he said to me, remember this guy, he's the one that saved you, Dave Tarantino.
The Navy were taught honor, courage, and commitment, and to not leave anyone behind. That's a military ethos that we take to heart. And so we were the ones on the scene, and it was up to us to do what we could.
The name tag, Dave Tarantino's name tag, was very precious to me. And that was tough to surrender. But in the context of history and in preserving the heroic deeds of that day, it made a lot of sense. So I was grateful in that context to give it to the Smithsonian.
At the Pentagon, like everywhere else, staffers were riveted by news of the attacks in New York.
For us already, it was pretty apparent these were terrorist attacks, and we were even presuming it was Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and coming out of Afghanistan and already thinking about the impact for us in the Department of Defense. And then almost at that time, we felt a really violent, shuddering impact at the Pentagon. The corridors themselves were literally full of the thickest, blackest smoke that you can imagine from ceiling to floor. And so people couldn't get their bearings. Part of the wall had been blown out by the landing gear of an aircraft. And that's when I first knew for certain that a plane had flown into the building.
I turned the corner and there's a tire from an airplane. Didn't realize what it was, but a huge piece of a fuselage of an airplane and a tire and some chairs.
Inside the crash site, conditions were deteriorating.
The flames were so hot, it was melting parts of the ceiling and would drip and melt through your uniform. And we thought, there's no way anyone is alive in here. And then we kind of heard a noise, kind of a weak noise off to the side.
In the distance, I see the smoke, and in a little...
The 20th anniversary of September 11th here in the Mountain State passed pretty much like that day. Both mornings were beautiful, cloudless, an azure blue sky. On that day, way back when, I had just started a new job. And I had been taken as just a practice because it was a beautiful neighborhood. The office where I was working was in this beautiful old neighborhood in town. And I would walk around the block in the morning before I would start classes. Well, there was no television at this place. But there were radios. And I got a call from my dad in Florida. And the voice message said, an airplane had crashed into one of the World Trade Center towers. Like everybody else that wasn't in the loop, not like the people in the Pentagon, but I was thinking of a civilian aircraft, a single-engine private aircraft. So I found a radio, and I turned it on a CBS affiliate, and I think it was Dan Rather, because they were going with a television feed, so I knew this must have been pretty big. And it was then that we found out that it wasn't a civilian aircraft, that it was a commercial aircraft, that it was a jetliner. And within moments of them making the discovery that it wasn't a small airplane, the second aircraft hit, the second jetliner hit the other tower. Having seen all of the video footage in retrospect, and by that I mean having seen it after the fact, not live, not as it was occurring, as probably so many millions of Americans did watching the morning TV, it was horrifying. But at the same time, the radio reports left you absolutely paralyzed. I kept thinking over and over as this was happening, we were listening to what was happening, and there would be recaps periodically throughout the broadcast period of that morning, you know, from when the attack initially occurred on into the afternoon, well into the night and on to the next day. But it just kept running through my mind. This was our Pearl Harbor, and it didn't take long for people to figure out who was behind it. In that day, at that time, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden were probably the most well-known terrorist organization, terrorist leader at that time. He worked, you know, he was in Afghanistan. He was with the Mujahideen. He was successful in working with those guys in driving the Russians out. And then he went and did his own thing. He had the money to do his own thing because his family was a rich construction contracting family in Saudi Arabia. So he had plenty of boot. And that's what he did. And in those days, he was kind of like almost like a James Bond supervillain, because there weren't that many operatives on that level who had the financial wherewithal to do something like this. And with a sleepy American bureaucracy, he was able to do it. So there we were, the other people in the building and myself, glued to a radio. And we're listening to this, and we're talking amongst ourselves. And the overall feeling that I can remember, a lot of people would probably say shock, then anger. I don't know. I was much more shocked later in the day as we realized the level of devastation. You know, when we heard this news initially, the buildings had not collapsed. They had sustained heavy damage. And to be honest with you, I didn't really consider the possibility of the buildings imploding. I really didn't until they started talking about it. And it actually happened. Then came the shock that I was already mad. it didn't take, you know, a whole lot. Maybe you didn't realize it was Osama bin Laden, but you knew this was not happenstance. You knew this was not an accident. And then we hear about the Pentagon. And we hear about Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and what happened there with those brave people. But the anger set in first, and there was plenty of time for shock the rest of the day. And there was. At the end of the day, I came home and I flipped on the TV and I'm watching this stuff. And it wasn't exactly as living it over again, but seeing the visual images coupled with, you know, how I saw it in my mind's eye at the beginning of the day, it was just terrible. It was just terrible. And I think one thing that stands out more than any of that is for the next 3 days after this event, there was no air traffic over the continental United States. None. No civilian air traffic, no commercial air traffic. If it was in the air, it was military. And that's probably the only time in my life that probably the only time since the Wright brothers that there'd been no solid 3 days without any air traffic whatsoever. And it was odd. No jet contrails, no helicopter sounds, no, like I said, civilian craft, you know, propeller-driven aircraft that you could hear that would be close to the ground, nothing. The skies were empty. I can't think of a time since World War II, where America came closer to becoming, you know, at a complete standstill. Think about that. No air traffic in the United States for 3 days. No, and they didn't know at that time how long this stand down was going to be. But it lasted for 3 days. Not a single airplane in the sky. Not a helicopter rotor, nothing, unless it was military. And I think, you know, we've forgotten, clearly, we have forgotten. I remember that day. I'll never forget it. And I can remember for those, you know, brief few shining weeks in the aftermath of what those bastards did, nobody was ashamed of being an American. Everybody was waving the flag. And when it came time to committing military force to rooting out these people, everybody was on board. Even John Kerry, because he said he voted for it before he voted against it. And now he's being made to look like a fool by the Chinese, and they do it handily. Coming up here on the 8 o'clock hour, we will be back with more of a conservative perspective, taking a look at the craziness that's happened since. That concludes, by the way, our 20th anniversary retrospective. I'm never ever going to say to anyone whenever we play one of these, because I like doing these shows, for the importance, for the gravity of what it is. I'm not going to say I hope you enjoyed it, but I do hope that it gave you pause. And if you were around that day and remember some of those things, that it kind of reignited the passions that stirred in your heart as an American from that time. We'll be back with more of ACP right after this.
If you could see me now, the one who said
that he'd rather roam. The one who said he'd rather be alone. If you could only see me now, if I could hold you now, just for a moment, if I could really make you mine. Just for a while, turn back the hands of time. If I could only hold you now. I've been too long in the wind, too long in the rain, taking any comfort that I can. Looking back and longing for the freedom of my chains, and lying in your loving arms again. If you could hear me now, singing somewhere, lonely night, dreaming of the arms that held me tight. You could only hear me now. Oh, I've been too long in the wind, too long in the rain, taking any comfort that I can. Looking back and longing for the freedom of my chains, and lying in your loving arms again. I can almost feel your loving arms again.
Okay. Welcome back. Hey, Conservative Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. Blogtalkradio.com. Anyway, it's good to be back with you. That was some powerful stuff, really, is what it was. And I like to say, again, you know, I hope that you didn't enjoy it. But I hope that it brought back some of those memories from that day. I think that, and I mean that for every one of us. Every one of us remembers what it was that day, and then the days following. All of us remember what it was like to be an American. Absolutely. Well, at the in New York, Joe Biden was scheduled to make some remarks on the at the anniversary thing. There, but at the last minute, he was scratched. Last week, things started popping out from the White House that Biden's own staff can't stand to listen to him. And it isn't because of what he's got to say exactly. I mean, it's not policies. They don't disagree with his policies. They probably told them, you know, they probably told him what to say on it. The problem is, because of his current cognitive status, you know, there's no telling what the hell's going to come out when he speaks off the cuff. He's really this loose cannon, and it horrifies them every time he steps up to the microphone. Yesterday, let's see, wait a minute. Yesterday. On Monday, White House staffers were listening to him. They're, you know, he's got monitors, okay, whenever he's talking with anybody, whether it's, you know, an address to the public or whether it's what they call a presser with these handpicked reporters or it's some kind of video conference or Zoom meeting, whatever he's doing, wherever he's at, he's got handlers and there are people around there listening to him. And they were so worried about what he was going to say. It was a conference on the wildfires that are devastating our western states. And the reason they're devastating our western states is due to bad land management policies by the liberal eco freaks that are in there. They don't want any clear cutting. They don't believe in any back burning or any of this kind of stuff. It just happens. And then so you get all this dense undergrowth where the guys can't clear cut or burn out the undergrowth, and then it gets dry, as it does in the West. Then all it takes is some stooge throwing the remnants of a joint out or a lightning strike in a very dry area. Pow. You've got what we've seen all summer. So these bad, so they're having meetings about it. Well, Biden is getting ready to talk to these guys about it, and they cut him off in mid-sentence. They just dropped the feed. You lost the video. They showed the Indian head and the test patterns, and that was it. It was done. It was over. They are constantly worrying about what he's going to say, about what's going to come out of his mouth when he goes off script. Now, I don't know. I mean, I can make some educated guesses just as well as you can, but I don't know who is dictating his policies. But it appears that whoever's doing it and whoever's working with him, everybody fundamentally in Joe Biden's orbit, is begging him to keep his mouth shut and just be the good little puppet that they need. It's not the first time. The White House cut his audio feed when a reporter was asking him about the military's back before the deadline, he was asking about the military's deadline to withdraw from Afghanistan. Back in March, they did the same thing when Biden, out of left field, appropriately, volunteered to take questions. Can you imagine what his handlers must have thought? Oh, my God. What did he say? Cut him off. Just cut it. Now, puppet politicians are all well and good when they take their orders and they do as they're told. But they can be problematic either when they try to seize the real power or when they become, like Joe has, so verbally incontinent that they can't be trusted to stick to the script and speak only when their strings are pulled. I said way back January that he wouldn't last out the summer, and I was wrong. I'm not gonna make that mistake again, and I'm not gonna make another prediction, and I'm not gonna say that he's gonna be out by Thanksgiving or he's gonna be out by President's Day 2020. I'm not gonna do any of that. But at the same time, when you look at these things, and believe me, there's no shortage of these things throughout his campaign and his presidency, and I guarantee you, in preparation for the 2022 midterms, there are a lot of political outlets that are focusing on just these things. And it's going to be a grocery list. And this presidency isn't going to get better. And when we take all these things into consideration, and yeah, I did. I really did think that the pressures would have gotten to him by now and he would have cracked up. And I don't know where we would be, but I thought he would be gone, and he's not. But I don't know how much, longer his staff can keep on propping him up if every time they do, they got to turn around and shut the audio feed on him or cut his mic off whenever he decides to get up ahead of steam and, you know, start moving his lips on his own. Speaking of which, when he does move his lips on his own, this is what you get. I feel badly for the Aussies because their government is going completely socialist totalitarian on them. But I like the Australian people a lot. And I found this clip from an Australian. Oh, come on, man. Tell me. Don't tell me it ain't there. It better be. Well, daggone. I don't guess it is. I had to check. Maybe if I hit refresh, I really hoped I had that put in there. But sometimes it happens. I was working ahead and again. And really, I don't even have to play the clip. I mean, it was just a cute thing. We all know what he says. Every one of us knows what he says. We've heard him say it a million times. And it's all the same thing. What's going to happen? At some point, and I don't know when, safely we would assume if he does make it through the first term, he's not going to run again. He'd be 82, 83 years old. So that's out. He's not going to do that. And who's left? Well, the champion is Kamala Harris. I don't know. I mean, I didn't think Biden was going to win, and it's entirely possible. You know, what's to keep her from winning? If Joe Biden can do it, I mean, it did it once. I mean, now they know how to do it. What's to keep them from doing it again? I don't know. Earlier in the summer, I spent an hour close to it talking with David Horowitz. And David Horowitz is behind frontpagemag.com, the David Horowitz Freedom Center, discovering the networks, an incredibly intelligent man. As a matter of fact, we're going to go over some stuff that David wrote here in just a little bit. But in the conversation, I asked him what it would take. What would have to happen in order to stem this communist progressive flood that we see. We see it everywhere. Nobody wants to call it what it is, but that's what it is. And he said, an overwhelming landslide. That's the only thing that's going to stop it. We can't counter it. It's not a fencing match. We're not using foils here. We're using broadswords. And we have to have all our might behind every stroke. That's how you do it. Nope, never mind. I found it. When Joe Biden says things like this, and this, again, this is from Sky News, but it's, and that's a Fox umbrella. That's under the Fox News umbrella. Sky News, and this is from Australia. Fantastic. Just, I love this.
And just before we go, let's end the evening with a word from the leader of the free world. I'll personally write a check to anybody who can decipher what Joe Biden is trying to convey here.
Yeah, that, you know, well, you know, what do you want to do with Biden? I want to box him. I should be so lucky. You know what I mean? But this, the kinds of things, or, you know, stuff that's coming out of Florida, stuff that's coming out of, you know, Robert E. Lee had been in Afghanistan. You're the one. No, anyway.
Florida, Robert E. Lee. How is that man dressing himself, let alone leading the most powerful nation on earth?
Ouch. So, one more time.
And just before we go, let's end the evening with a word from the leader of the free world. I'll personally write a check to anybody who can decipher what Joe Biden is trying to convey here.
Yeah, that, you know, well, you know, what do you want to do with Biden? I want to box him. I should be so lucky. You know what I mean? But this, the kinds of things, or, you know, stuff that's coming out of Florida, stuff that's coming out of, you know, Robert E. Lee had been in Afghanistan. You're the one. No, anyway.
Florida, Robert E. Lee. How is that man dressing himself, let alone leading the most powerful nation on earth?
Well, my guess is he's probably not dressing himself. It is the elephant in the room for many, many people. But the evidence is overwhelming. Look, go back 8 years. Yeah, he said dumb stuff. He said dumb stuff for a long time. But just go back 8 years. Go back to like the first term, or 12 years rather. Go back to the first term, Joe Biden, under, you know, in Obama's first term, or even the second term. And look at the guy. And then in the last 2 years, you know, in the time, you know, from the campaign up until he got in the White House. Woodrow Wilson had a devastating stroke during his time in office. And when that happened, his wife, Edith, fundamentally was the president. She had her advisors, and I'm sure she probably conferred with his in the cabinet, and they made decisions in President Wilson's name that President Wilson didn't have anything to do with it. When Ronald Reagan was shot, Nancy Reagan looked after him like a mother grizzly bear. And now, not exactly doing the same thing. Again, you know, the gunshot wound did take a little time to recover from, but Ron was cognitive within a few days of that. But at the turn of the century, you have, you know, World War One, and this happens. Can you imagine Jill Biden? Obviously, Dr. Jill Biden. Okay, it's a degree in education, and Whoopi Goldberg thought that she would make an excellent Surgeon General. Said it on The View. Whoopi Goldberg said on The View that we need a Surgeon General. You know, that Jill Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, would make a great Surgeon General. Nothing good is going to come from this administration. I don't care who's running it. You know, the speculation is that, you know, the shadow government is really being run by Barack Obama. And there are many signs to point to that. Just look how much life is like what it was then. We were a laughingstock to our enemies. Of course, Obama never had the opportunity to surrender anything so massive as Afghanistan. So what do we call it? You know, we've looked at this from a lot of different angles. We've looked at it from the possibility that because he is so on the hook to China, and he is on the hook to China for millions and millions and millions of dollars. Some fat money. Yes, he is. He very much is. And then again, you know, we look at the fact clearly all the evidence points to a cognitive decline that is not conducive for a guy who is the chief executive of the United States of America. What do you call a party that takes the occasion of the 20th anniversary of the worst attack on our homeland since the British burned the White House in 1812 to lecture Americans on their persecution of Muslims, especially when this attack that we're talking about was inspired by Islamic doctrine in a declaration of unprovoked war against the Jews and the Crusaders? What do you call a president who, on the anniversary of this attack, describes this as a religion of peace? The 2001 assault on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon was inspired by Islamic doctrines leading to similar attacks on Jews and Christians for over 1,000 years, including hundreds of thousands of slaughters and beheadings of Christians in the last 20 years and attacks on Jewish civilians as recently as a year ago. Islam is, without any question, the most warlike, intolerant religion on the planet, yet America's Commander-in-Chief defends it as a religion of peace and warns American citizens commemorating an unprovoked Muslim attack, which took nearly 3,000 innocent American lives, more lives than we lost at Pearl Harbor, by the way. To have us put on sackcloth and ashes to atone for this imaginary persecution of Muslims. Look up the statistics, Mr. President. It is the Jews who are the most persecuted religious group in America, thanks in large part to the influx of radical Muslims from Palestine and other Muslim nations at war with Israel because they hate Jews. What do you call a party whose leaders turn a 20-year victory over Islamic barbarism in the country that attacked us on 9/11 into a massive defeat? Abandons massive air bases and $90 billion in advanced weaponry without a fight or a plan to retrieve them, and makes the Jew and Christian-hating Taliban terrorists partners, thereby legitimizing them in the process. What do you call a party that is legitimizing Islam and Islamic terrorists who stone women for adultery, behead them for fornication, deny them education, sanction their beating by irate husband, and make them second-class citizens generally compared to males? What do you call a party that allows the terrorist Taliban to vet tens of thousands of Afghan refugees entering the United States and disappearing into the general population from where the terrorists among them can launch terrorist attacks? What do you call a party that treats 81 million unvaccinated Americans as domestic enemies and, in violation of the Constitution, forces vaccines on them even if they have medical conditions that might cause the vaccines to kill them, but yet allows hundreds of thousands of unvetted illegal migrants already infected with COVID to cross U.S. borders and be flown into the heartland by the United States Air Force, and once there, to get free medical care, welfare payments, and education? What do you call a party that refuses to impose consequences on American diplomats and military generals who enabled the worst, most humiliating American defeat in our history? Why are Secretary of Defense Austin, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs Milley, and Secretary of State Blinken still holding their jobs? What do you call a party that is pursuing a national witch hunt against the former president and his patriotic supporters, calling them domestic terrorists when 99% of the violence is coming from the anti-American ranks of Black Lives Matter and most of the Democrat-supported political left? What do you call a party whose leaders require all of America's soldiers to undergo indoctrination in an ideology that calls for the dismantling of America and tells them that their oath to defend the Constitution is an oath to defend a document that codifies white supremacy? What American patriot is going to risk his or her young life for that country? I have the answer to this question and all the others, and you already do too. You call the party responsible for all these actions a party that has committed treason. Today's Democrat leaders have traduced the Constitution and betrayed our citizens and the country they love to the murderous enemies that America has around the world. Patriots need to stop pussyfooting around this treason and call it by its right name. Impeach Biden, Harris, Pelosi, and the Joint Chiefs for treason. Only when this happens will a recovery from this nightmare appear on the horizon. You call it treason. Speaking of treason, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Army General Mark Milley single-handedly took top secret action to preempt then-President Donald Trump from ordering a military strike or launching nuclear weapons, according to a new book written by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa. The name of the book is called Peril. Milley was worried that after the January 6th Capitol breach, Trump could go rogue, and called a secret meeting on January 8th with senior military leaders. During that meeting, Milley instructed senior military officials in charge of the National Military Command Center to not take orders from anyone unless he was involved. No matter what you're told, you do the procedure. You do the process. And I'm part of that procedure, Milley told them. Milley considered it an oath, said Bob Woodward. The book also reveals that Milley had two back-channel phone calls with China's top general to reassure him that the U.S. would not attack, even promising to give him a heads up if it did. according to a write-up of this book by the Washington Post, General Milley, 4 days before the 2020 presidential election, assured his Chinese counterpart, General Li Zhuoxiang of the People's Liberation Army, that the U.S. would not strike. The book said Milley's first call was prompted by intelligence that suggested that the Chinese believed the U.S. was preparing to attack. General Li, I want to assure you that the American government is stable and everything is going to be okay. We are not going to attack or conduct any kinetic operations against you. Milley even pledged to alert the communist Chinese General Li in the event of a U.S. attack. General Li, you and I have known each other now for 5 years. If we're going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. It's not going to be a surprise. In his second call on January 8th, 2021, Milley promised General Li, we are 100% steady. Everything's fine, but democracy can be sloppy sometimes. Milley did not tell Trump about the call. Also, according to the book, General Milley told House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, I agree with you on everything. Jesus Christ. After the speaker called him and pressed him to secure the country's nuclear weapons and called Trump crazy. Woodward and Costa write that after the call with Pelosi, Milley decided he had to act and told the military service chiefs and then CIA director to watch everything all the time. Milley was overseeing the mobilization of America's national security state without the knowledge of the American people or the rest of the world, according to the book. Some might contend that Milley had overstepped his authority and taken extraordinary power for himself, they wrote, but said the chairman believed his actions were a good faith precaution to ensure there was no historic rupture in the international order, no accidental war with China or others, and no use of nuclear weapons, as Milley felt no absolute certainty that the military could control or trust Trump. Felt no absolute certainty that the military could control or trust Trump. If the military is suspicious of the government or covets power for themselves that the civilian branches of government control, and they take steps to abrogate that power unto themselves, folks, that is called a coup. Now, if this were a failed coup, bastards like Milley and Austin and Blinken would probably have a choice. The wall with a blindfold and a cigarette, or maybe just lock them in a room with a pistol and hope they'll do the honorable thing. But that's not going to happen. These men won't even receive a conviction in the court of public opinion. December 6, 1941, the admiral in charge of the Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor was Husband Kimmel. His army counterpart was a man named General Walter Short. They both had exemplary careers. They were trained and competent military men. They were patriots. They loved their country. They would have gone to any lengths necessary to see that America was protected and made safe. Yet, through a series of decisions and lack of decisions, until the surrender of Afghanistan, Pearl Harbor stood as one of our greatest military intelligence failures. Those men loved their country. Those men would have done anything to save their country. Those men were relieved of command almost immediately after Pearl Harbor. There were congressional investigations, and those guys had to take the hit because they were the ones that were in charge at that time. They were also the one that made certain decisions. They were also the ones that made certain decisions that led, in a way, contributed to the damage we suffered at Pearl. We're not going to get into that. I think the story is a little bit different here. I don't think that General Milley and Secretary Austin or Blinken loved this country at all. I do not. I do not think that these men have the best interests of America, her citizens, its security, or our military at heart by any stretch of the imagination. And I am fearful of the fact that there are probably many more officers like General Milley within the ranks of the United States military who are like-minded. Hydra. I keep going back to that, man. Do yourself a favor. Grab some popcorn. Get some nachos. Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Just, okay? Hydra. It's a great name for him. It's an evil, invasive force that has infested our government. They march under the banner of communism or socialism, whichever one you call it. It's all tyranny. It falls under the flag of tyranny. So we'll call them Hydra. And nothing's going to happen to those guys, too. Again, what do you call this? You call this treason. We think of America's enemies, we always think, because for so many decades, our greatest existential threats were external. The fascists, the communists, the Nazis, Muslim terrorists. And, we defeated just about all of them, but it is our domestic enemies. Okay, these guys grew up in America. A lot of them grew up in America. They're just Americans, you or I. But look at their ideology. Look at what they wish to do. People who listen, and I'm not saying this to flatter you or myself. People who listen to talk radio, especially conservative political talk radio, about issues like what we're talking about and cultural issues as well, you guys are some of the smartest people in the country. And you're not going to take my word for any of this. You're going to check it out on your own because I could be wrong. And I know that when I come before you, my commitment is to be as accurate as I can be. If I screw up, if I miss something, I'm going to own it. But don't take my word for it. Check it out for yourselves. But folks who listen to shows like this and shows like, when Limbaugh was on the air, just conservative radio, you guys are the smartest people in the country. You are able to disseminate information independently and do a pretty damn good job of it. You're capable of discerning for yourself what's going on out there and who to believe. You see this. And we kind of look sideways at each other and amongst one another. Yeah, we'll say it. But the preacher should already be on the same page with the deacons in the choir. He should turn around and face the congregation and say these things. Say them aloud. This is treason. We're regardless of his cognitive decline. People who are running this show in his name are traitors as well. Arnold Schwarzenegger says, screw your freedoms. No, Arnold, screw you. And this idiot Joe Biden said, it's not about your freedoms, it's about your safety. You sacrifice your freedom in the name of safety, you don't get either one. You lose both. It's treason. And like I said, you and I can talk about it, and that's fine. But we need everybody talking about it, not just you and I. Not just the like-minded brothers and sisters within our great conservative family. Everybody. And there are people that are not going to want to hear it. There are people that are going to recognize that it's probably right, but they do not wish to go through what would have to be gone through in order to cleanse this, to purge it, this cancer, to treat it, to excise it. Because it would be painful. Probably a little chaotic. And, you know, we would have to be mindful of the opportunists that prey on that type of chaos. But if we don't do it now, when are we going to get a better chance? When will we get another chance, let alone a better one? Horowitz was right. Overwhelming landslide, an onslaught. Flush them from the boards of education, to the county commissions, the city councils, your state legislatures, your wards, your districts, your Washington representation. Sweep them out. We've got to start somewhere. And from there, hopefully, then we can get honest men accountable to weeding out these unelected bureaucrats, these people that create these choking, stifling regulations and mandates that aren't even laws, but yet we're compelled to obey them. There are hundreds of Americans left in Afghanistan. Who's talking about that? They say 100. I say horseshit. There may be thousands. 117,000 Afghans, 5,400 Americans. That was the tally. 5,400 Americans? You know there were more than 5,400 Americans in that country. And they weren't all hanging around in Kabul. Now they're just hanging from lampposts after being raped and tortured. Or maybe they're just being hung in cages and burned. And Joe Biden's going to look at you with a straight face, and he's going to say that we took home everybody that wanted to go home. What's that mean? That means that burned, raped, tortured, hung individual wanted to stay there for that. That's what he's having you believe. That's what he's saying when he tells you that we brought home everybody that wanted to come home. And there's more than 100 of those people. And my understanding is, very few of the Afghans who actually helped us, our allies, were on those flights. They're unvetted people. We don't know who they are. We don't know where the hell they came from. And I guarantee you, if the Taliban was responsible for the vetting process, what do you think we're going to see soon all over the country? Who's talking about that? The State Department is keeping private rescue efforts to a minimum, denying them access to safe passage through airports in the area because they're afraid that they're going to be made to look bad, that these guys are going to come back with the stories that are the truth. Six aircraft are sitting at Hamid Karzai International Airport awaiting takeoff. They got people on board. They've been there for 8 days. The Taliban will not give them permission. Washington does nothing. Washington congratulates the Taliban on becoming our partners. Washington legitimizes the Taliban. Joe Biden legitimizes Democrats and weak, feckless Republicans legitimize the Taliban. That means that the Democrats and Joe Biden and these weak, feckless Republicans, these spineless, squishy Republicans, are also legitimizing rape and torture and immolation and mutilation and throwing gay people off buildings. The Muslim extremists, those are the guys throwing the gay people off the buildings. The moderate Muslims are the ones down on the ground watching them fall. The radical Muslim cuts your head off. The moderate Muslim holds your legs. It's treason. Well, we've got 15 minutes left, and I think I'm going to go ahead and knock off early. This has been kind of a heavy night. I've been living the 20th anniversary of 9/11 since Saturday with editing up the retrospective there. I'm sorry that that last clip kind of repeated itself. I did not mean for it to, but every now and then you just, you know, it happens, and I apologize. When I realized what was going on, that's when I faded it out. We will be back on Thursday. ACP is heard here live Tuesdays and Thursdays as it stands. Barring some changes that are going to be coming up soon, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the program that goes out on the Mojo 5.0 radio network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, well, you should be, because it is the very best in conservative and libertarian talk radio out there. That's all the time I'm going to give to it tonight. We will be back here on Thursday, 7 p.m., taking a look at things. And Mark Hoffman will be with us in the 8 to 9 slot with Patriot Nation Radio Live. And we will be taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you on Thursday.